Next hour, Bill Bean joins me as we talk about demonic forces. But this hour, we will take your phone calls with William Forstgen as we talk about his work, One Second After. Welcome back, William Forstgen with us. William, there's also another benefit here, too. Look at how many people this would employ getting the whole nation's grid insulated.
I can recall a campaign promises some years ago about shovel-ready projects, which we didn't seem to have any other than signs saying there's going to be a shovel-ready project here. You're absolutely right. The money being spent would, of course, be spent right here in the United States employing people to get our systems upgraded. Better that than shipping the money overseas.
Absolutely. And this would
we're not going to get into that too much, but there's so many things we're so frustrated with over that at the moment.
This would be the greatest infrastructure change since Eisenhower was around.
And you're also then referring to when we built the interstate highway system.
That's right.
I was just researching something out on that the other day for a project I'm working on. And not many people know that was part of a National Defense Act in case of thermonuclear attack.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Eisenhower, of course, Supreme Commander, Allied Forces in Europe, World War II. And he observed how the Germans used their interstate highway system, their Autobahn, for strategic moving of troops back and forth between the Eastern and Western Front, for working to evacuate from cities that were under attack and rebuild. 1954, it was Eisenhower who pushed through that the United States needed an interstate highway system in case of a nuclear war. The modern cost is somewhere around $500 billion. But one out of every four Americans uses an interstate highway every single day. Can we imagine America without that?
We'd still be back to the horse and buggy.
Yes. Or since I grew up in Jersey, driving down Route 1, where you got a traffic light every 100 yards. But look at how that profoundly changed America. Beefing up our infrastructure is a smart investment. Going all the way back to the start of our conversation this evening, it's spending $500 to insure a $300,000 or $400,000 house every year.
Would electrical engineers very easily be able to develop the plans to insulate the grid?
It's already there.
It's there.
We already know how to do it.
Excellent.
And I have been in some hardened facilities and such. Stratcom had me out to their command center at Omaha several years back for a conference on this. So I was just talking about this yesterday, and I must emphasize, everything I do is in the unclassified or declassified realm. I don't have a security clearance. I don't want one, because if I do, as a patriotic American, first of all, I'd be anxious that I make a mistake. I'm talking with you and I accidentally say the wrong thing. So I have to make that disclaimer again. This is all declassified information.
I understand.
But the knowledge is already there, how to properly harden facilities, crucial infrastructure points, and then also how to harden the general transmission system around the country.
All right, let's go to the phones for you. Let's go to Ryan in San Francisco to get things started. Hello, Ryan.
Hi.
Good to have you with us.
Yeah, this is amazing. I am on the show. But I was wondering, I have a question for the professor about EMPs and natural disasters. And I was sort of wondering if some of these things like Fukushima and Hiroshima or whatever, if they're actually caused by maybe government testing. Well, I guess that would be government testing, but, you know, I'm wondering if it has more to do with EMPs and less to do with the whole nuclear thing. What do you think?
Well, as we were talking about in the first hour, there's two primary triggers for an EMP. One is an actual use of a small fission bomb. You don't need a thermonuclear bomb, just a small fission bomb. The other one is a solar event. Now, obviously, I mean, the solar event is a natural phenomenon. It is happening all the time. What happened at Fukushima was the result of that terrible earthquake they experienced a couple of years back. So the two aren't related. But imagine a global level Fukushima of a CME blowing out the grid, and this is, again, unclassified information. One thing that worries the engineers dealing with this is, how do you turn a nuclear power plant back on after it's been shut down for more than a week? You need a massive amount of energy going in. But the thing that, again, unclassified information, what really worries folks is the storage of used fuel on site requires a tremendous amount of cooling and a tremendous amount of energy. You don't keep that properly contained and properly cooled, you will have a Fukushima.
You sure will. I had mentioned asteroid. Would an asteroid develop an EMP or simply a solar flare?
There has been detectable EMP from a large conventional explosions.
In the atmosphere.
In the atmosphere. I really couldn't give you an answer if you had a half-mile-wide asteroid coming straight at us.
And just blew up. It might create that.
It possibly could, but I would be a little bit more worried about the dang thing hitting Earth and then triggering an
explosion. Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah.
Let's go to Gail in Springfield, Missouri, on the wild card line. Hello, Gail. Thanks for calling. You're on with Dr. Forstgen.
Good evening, gentlemen. I have two questions.
Sure.
One, why do we not bury our lines underground? And two, why are we not building those large, I'm not sure if this is the right term, those large turbines that are made in China? Why are we not building them here in this country? We have McDonnell Douglas. We have big corporations like that that are used to building and have the facilities to build large machines. Why are we not doing that in this country?
All right, let's go through that. And McDonnell Douglas, of course, now part of Boeing. But what about burying lines? They are in some subdivisions. I don't know if they're doing it on a full scale.
Wow, see, that's a great question there, and I really appreciate it because it's a perfect setup for what we need to talk about. Regarding the buried lines, first of all, that isn't going to help us because why is an electrical discharge heading down to Earth? It's because we have a magnetic core. So even if you have a buried line,
just follows
it's it. Still going to short off.
Okay.
The Russians, look up Soviet Test 182, and they detonated a weapon over Kazakhstan back in 1962, and they had lines that were buried there that carried the overload for 500 miles into the power stations and blew an entire power station out.
And the turbines?
Regarding the turbines, I like to use analogies a lot. Imagine it's early December 1941, and we're getting the reports that Japanese are, we knew it was coming. And then somebody points out, we got a problem. All the airplanes we have on our aircraft carriers, the engines are made in Japan. We're not making a single engine for any airplane in America. If we go to war with Japan, do we have a problem? So she's asked a fundamental question that is, for me, it's incomprehensible that we're not thinking. Why are we not making it? Because it's cheaper to buy it from China.
We used to make
line answer.
We used to make them.
We used to make them. But then it started getting outsourced. And finally, a bean counter in an office said, what the heck? We can get it from China from half the price. Let them make it.
And how often do we use one of these things where we have to replace one?
They have to be individually made to order. In fact, the wiring still has to basically be hand-woven in for the large power transformers that are moving high energy loads across a pretty significant distance. So it's as one system starts to go down, order another one. So we don't have the reserve that we should have, warehouse, because that requires putting some advanced spending in an inventory.
Mm-hmm.
A very quick example, we had a major storm here 10 years ago, and the main pipeline providing water for Asheville, North Carolina, blew. It blew out at the dam. They had to fly in a replacement part. I think it was from somewhere in the Midwest. There was no reserve anywhere to be had here. If not for that replacement part, Asheville would have been totally without water.
Ugh. You talk about deaths?
Well, we live in a just-on-time delivery. I know George, you and I are basically the same age, and we can remember walking into a pharmacy when we were kids, and the pharmacist had a big room in the back, and he had a month or 2 months worth of supplies.
Mm-hmm.
You walk into your pharmacy today to pick up a script, it gets punched into the computer, that goes to the central office, FedEx pulls up the next day, and it's just enough supply to keep things going.
Yeah, they have minimal inventory today. Minimal.
Right. Well, the same is true with the electrical industry. Minimal inventory.
Let's go to Michael in Montreal, International Line. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, George. William. I spoke to you last time you were on, as a matter of fact, about 6 months ago. I think one of the scariest aspects of EMP that you've completely left out is the fact that anybody can go online and order plans or even complete kits to build an EMP generator as large as to take out New York, or as small as something you could put in your car to disable a following police car with his radar.
Tell me about
this. This is really scary. This is much more, I think, a scary possibility than a CME or a nuclear attack.
Can I scream no comment? I don't want to talk about it.
That's not what you said last time.
Since I spoke to you,
as a small update, some of the companies that were selling the complete kits are permanently out of stock. I don't know if we did a commercial for them and everybody bought them or if they just withdrew it, but a lot of them are gone. There's still a couple out there, though.
Well, William, without dwelling on this, is this true?
Yes. And I'm not giving any advice or website links or anything else.
No, I think we best leave this one alone, huh?
We're going to leave that one alone, yeah.
I want to desperately ask you how it works, but I'm not going to.
We'll talk off air.
Okay. Jeez. All right, Michael, thanks for that.
Michael, thanks for the update.
Next up, we've got Jim in Aurora, Illinois, first-time caller. Jim, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, George and Dr. Forstin. It's such a pleasure and to be able to speak with you. I have many sleepless nights, thank you, George, with your provocative shows and
Perfect.
The information that you have, which is so cutting-edge. I think we're in a society here where people are buried into their iPods and aren't paying attention to what's going on. But I have a question. Has the Internet, YouTube, or these emails that you see past, send this on to the next 10 people you know, have those types of vehicles been used to put the word out to what I believe is a society that's sleeping with its head in the sand and doesn't really want to know, except for what the next reality show is, it's out there. These are serious issues, and I think using the Internet, we have all these devices, the smartphones. Has that been used to spread the word somehow I hate to say entertaining way, but take advantage of those tools?
Social networking.
Yeah.
What do you think, William?
George, one of the real pleasures of being on your show is the folks you have calling in. And this gentleman just gave the biggest underhand pitch ever to hit something out of the park. You are, the gentleman who's on the phone with us right now is one of hundreds of thousands of listeners. If but 10% of the folks listening to this program got online in the morning, said, hey, I heard something pretty darn disturbing last night. You can click on to Coast to Coast website. You can get the podcast, listen to it. Or let's even just say, go on Wikipedia, look up Carrington event, look up EMP. Using social networking, get the information out there viral. Yeah, okay, my publisher will yell at me if I don't throw in or read the book 1 second after. Do any of that. And the gentleman is absolutely right. Social networking. If we could get 5 million people motivated to contact their state reps and their federal government reps, we could move this thing off center.
I think we can do this.
Coast to coast.
When we start pushing, and we're going to do it sooner than later, I think we can get this done. Yep.
Yeah. It's an election year topic.
We've got Tom in Westminster, Maryland now. Welcome to the program. Thomas, you're up with us.
Good morning, gentlemen. Dr. Bean, how fortuitous that I should call. I remember you from last time as well. I also remember the other caller. I think it's the only time I ever became furious with Mr. Norrie. George, I don't know if you remember me sending you a fast blast from the detective in Maryland. I'm a retired cop.
Yeah, I do.
And, mm-hmm. in the world are you doing? Please stop it now. And I was truly upset. Yeah, we don't want to give anybody any ideas. Dr. Bean, the reason I'm calling tonight.
Dr. Bean's coming up next.
Oh, I'm sorry. I met the professor. Professor, doctor, whatever.
Oh, Bill,
the reason
please.
I'm calling is to offer my assistance. Like I said, I'm retired. I did work as a lobbyist briefly after I retired from law enforcement. In fact, I have the record for getting the fastest bill made into law in the history of Maryland. It went from first reading to being signed into law with a veto-proof vote in 34 days. Now, I became very familiar with the craft of getting legislation pushed through. And when you talked about getting legislation on a state level, it rang a bell. And I thought, you know what? If you'd like, I'd certainly be willing to lend my assistance to you in getting state legislation pushed through. I know all the ins and outs. And I'd be glad to offer my services free of charge to you.
I'd like that. I'd like that.
How would you like me to get in touch? I can leave my information with the screener if you'd like.
Well, and let's do that. And what we're going to be doing in the not-too-distant future, as I just mentioned, we're going to start developing from the grassroots level of Coast to Coast and this vast audience a national push using William Forstgen and Michael Maloof and their work to get members of Congress alerted to this. And I would guess William will probably end up on some cable network newscasts and shows as we talk about this. But I'm going to push on my end to make this a national issue for the 2016 presidential campaign. And we're going to get this done. This is a legacy to all of us for our children. And it's got to be done because one day, whether it's an X flare or somebody, you know, detonates a nuke in the atmosphere, it's going to happen.
Yes.
And we'll be out of luck.
In fact, next month up in Minneapolis, there is a annual convention for state legislators. And as I mentioned earlier, I was talking to the state legislator from Maine who pushed through the first state-level law, and she's trying to get this on the agenda for the meetings there in Minneapolis next month. So I'm begging folks, do the social networking. Get a hold of your state legislators as well. Don't just think about your congressman and senator. Talk about your local reps who are far more responsive. And say, look, guys, you're going to be at a conference next month in Minneapolis, or the next time you're in the state house, this is about you and me and our neighborhoods.
Okay, William, stay with us.
It's about working locally.
We're going to come back with you in just a moment and wrap things up with final phone calls on probably one of the most important issues we've come across in a long, long time. One Second After is the book. William Forstgen is our guest, doctor, PhD type. I'm George Norrie, and we will be back with you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. One Second After, that's the name of William Forstgen's book. What are the chances of getting this turned into a movie? That would help.
Please call my agent.
Please. Have you pitched it?
Yeah, it's been optioned. But as so often happens, it goes to an option, then the producer who optioned it went someplace else. And there's currently another, shall we say, company that's interested in optioning the book.
Let's hope so. That'd be a great way to get part of the message out.
That's been we got pretty close a couple years ago. However, suddenly a absolutely horrid television series came out, which at the start looked like it was about EMP, but turned into, really bad sci-fi at its worst. And that killed the idea. And that, if I can just add, is a great frustration. The EMP has suddenly become popular in the science fiction genre and different television series, but they always seem to get it wrong. And the misinformation that's out there stays, and it can be very frustrating at times.
And you know, this Therefore, could happen, William, at any time when we least expect it.
Pearl Harbor happened when we least expected it. So did 9/11.
Yeah. They say some new about both. But in this case, I don't think we're going to get much of a warning, are we?
That's the whole thing. I would think almost no warning. People ask, how do we prevent it? Really, about the only way to truly prevent it is we have to convey a robust foreign policy that if we're picking up the underground signals that a particular group or nation is contemplating doing this, we will, if need be, preemptively move to stop it before it happens.
Are there
cowardice in the face of this is frightening.
Are there any other countries that have insulated their grid system?
I'm told that Israel has done a rather good job because they are on the front line. And speaking about front line, I have a friend in Israel. She's with the national radio station there. And she just posted up on Facebook shortly before you and I went on the air about sirens going off and another rocket attack hitting near where she lives. So as we know, and it was in the news, and you alluded to it right at the start of your show, Israel is literally at war today. Now, if Hamas could gain control of a small fission bomb detonated out over the Med, just high enough to be able to also take out Israel, they would try to blow the infrastructure down.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones we go. Randy in Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Randy, you're on with Bill Forstjen. Go ahead.
Yes, hey, how are you guys doing?
Good, Randy. Thank you.
Good. I hear a lot about Asheville, North Carolina. I was born there, so I'm sure you love it, because I always do.
I love it. Yeah.
William. By the way, nice to be on the line. George,
sure thing.
William, I was just curious as to whether or not it might be something as simple as some type of fuse to shut the grid down before something destroyed it.
Well, you were talking about those circuits.
I know it's classified now, yeah. I heard you mention that. That was my question before you mentioned it, but that's what I was curious about. And a lot of things in this world, you're not going to be able to control anyway. And the more gloom and doom that you kind of put on yourself about the world, the more it's going to feel like it's more gloom and doom to you. You know what I mean? I know you're trying to make it aware for everybody that this could happen, but so can that and that and that and that. You're going to die.
Well, here's the big thing, though. I think, Randy, you can't stick your head in the sand and pretend that this is never going to happen or that it can't happen. And so I don't think it's a matter of doom and gloom. I think it's a matter of reality, and let's fix it before it really happens. Bill?
Yeah, you know, Randy raises a good point. I will freely confess, and I know, George, you and I talked about this when we met last year. There are times it gets to me when I do an interview like this, or sometimes two or three in a day, but I also have to go on a daily basis and live my life. I mean, my daughter's asleep in the next room. She's home from college for the summer. I'll do this show. I'll get up in about 3 or 4 hours to see her off to summer school and go on with my life. But you also hit the point correctly, George. We can't have our head in the sand. So we got to balance this. We have to confront the issues, but at the same time, enjoy each day that
comes. Oh, absolutely. Look, sometimes during the end of the week, after intensive shows on things that are very, very difficult, whether it's wars, angels, demons, you name it, you know, I like to spend a little time on a weekend just to try to forget about it. But it's always there, William. It's always part of me. And it's got to be the same with you.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And that's one of the reasons I love living in Asheville, North Carolina. Well, I don't live in Asheville. I live on a mountainside outside of Asheville that I thank God I'm here. And though it's hanging over me at times, I also enjoy every day that God gives me.
Okay, let's go to Dave up there in California, the northern part. Welcome to the program, David. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much, George, for taking my call.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Your program has a huge impact on your audience. I purchased both A Nation Forsaken and One Second After hearing about them on your show. And I'd like to point out that it's not just the primary problem. It's the secondary and tertiary effects that hit us, too.
There's no question about that. And it's like a, yeah. it's a wave, William, isn't it?
Absolutely. It is not the EMP itself that triggers a casualty rate as high as 90%. It's all the effects that come afterwards, from loss of water supply, loss of food, loss of medication, social breakdown, repercussions that no matter how many times we've talked about it, there will be repercussions, unintended consequences.
Gasoline pumps won't work. Your cars won't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you run out of that full tank of gasoline, that's it for you.
When I first started researching this topic, I went to my local pharmacist, small town, you know, sat down with her over a cup of coffee. It's like, suppose the power went off, what would happen? At the end of the hour, she was sitting there in tears because she said, my God, I've never thought about some of this. The two people in your town who know the most about everything are your kindergarten teachers, because five-year-olds will blow their mouth off about anything to them. And then also your pharmacist. They know more than the family doctor.
And the barber.
And the barber.
Throw the barber in there. They always know everything.
And she made, you know, she was saying, Bill, there are people that will die within the week if I don't have the medication for them tomorrow.
Well, you know, and think about commerce in terms of economics. I mean, this is, we're not talking about life or death here, but in terms of economics, if the grid goes down, you can't use the internet. You can't use your cell phones. And like Facebook can't generate its revenue with no internet. They're out of business.
Think of what percentage of our money is actually electronic. All that is wiped.
It's all gone. You can't go to your ATM.
Right.
What good is cash? You can't buy anything anyway because there won't be anything around to buy.
Right.
Stores will be ransacked. Look, I remember just in St. Louis, if we had a anticipated heavy snowstorm.
Oh, my God.
The stores were empty. I'm talking about the food stores.
Bread and milk.
Always. They go first.
Yes.
And bottled water now.
I can remember Sandy. Sandy hit where I grew up. And when I started being able to reconnect to people, you know, friends of mine that were living there, they were like, Bill, this place was crazy after only 2 or 3 days. You know, lines, a half mile long of people trying to get 5 gallons of gas because, oh, yeah, I'm prepared. I got an electrical generator. Well, they need the gasoline to get the electrical generator to keep on running. And after running it for 5 hours, it didn't run dry. The cascading effects in Sandy should have been a wake-up call to this entire nation. And I think it was hugely underreported. Mm-hmm.
Or Katrina.
Oh, my gosh. There are horror stories about Katrina that we never really have faced.
No.
Such as what happened in the hospitals. There was actual euthanasia going on. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. There was actual cases of people being OD'd in the hospital. Remember, there was actually, it went to trial at one point, and then it was dropped.
On purpose?
Yes.
Would they ask?
The temperature, well, you know, the hospital was climate controlled for New Orleans. So the temperature inside the hospital was 100 plus degrees.
Ugh.
To evacuate people, they had to carry them 8-9 stories up to the roof for a helicopter to pull them out. So it was utter chaos.
Can you imagine doing that nationwide?
And, in fact, would the helicopters even be flying? One of the very first casualties in this is, of course, all of us, you know, you, me, everyone listening, we remember the horror of, 13 years ago, of watching 3,000 people die and the several hundred people on board the planes. I would not want to be on any commercial flight when an EMP event happens. Estimates are that perhaps 250,000 people would die in the first minute because the airplanes shut down. Because they're computer controlled.
So those of you listening, the time's going to come where we're going to ask for your help, and we're going to unleash you on your congressmen and your senators and your state folks, and I want you each to do your own campaign when we do this, because we can get this done. I am convinced we can make the people in this country who've got the authority to approve this and do it, to do it. And one day, William Forstchen, they'll be talking about you and Maloof, and you know what? That'll be a good thing.
You know, it'd be even better, George, if nobody is talking about us 20 years from now, because it never happened. It's an alternate history. It's like an old Star Trek episode where they go into an alternate history. Well, our reality becomes that it never happened.
Maybe we had an X-10, but the system kept working.
Yes.
Let's go next to Aaron in Seattle, Washington. Hello, Aaron. Take it away.
Hello, Mr. Norrie.
Hi.
Professor Forstchen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
First thing, I had kind of a snarkic remark for Mr. Forstchen. He said that those lobbyists said, oh, we're going to make policy from a novel. My response is that's not the first time it's happened. Do you remember a book from Upton Sinclair called The Jungle?
Well said.
Or one that I recall when I read it when I was a kid, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
It's a novel, but it awakened us to issues that we had to confront in the 60s. So many novels. 1984. 1984 is a classic example of a novel that scared the daylights out of us and maybe prevented it from happening. Yeah,
way before its time.
Yeah.
And I had a quick question as well. I can't remember where I heard it from, but I heard that if you have electronics that are completely unpowered, as like you literally pull the plug so it has no power running through it whatsoever, that it's somewhat shielded from EMPs. Is that correct or no?
Yeah. In fact, I would urge folks, if you want to put some of your electronics into like a reserve, just go online and look up Faraday cage. A Faraday cage, actually, everybody has one in their house already. It's called a microwave. And that's to prevent the type of radiation that's being used to cook your food from zapping your brain as well. But it can also prevent anything from going in. So a simple Faraday cage is a great backup system that everybody should have in their house.
Almost like a little room to go in or something like that?
In fact, they now make Faraday bags. They're really neat. I got one in my car. I was cleaning my car out the other day, and somebody had given it to me at a conference. It's like a Ziploc bag. And, gosh, remember, George, when we were doing the television program, remember I had one,
mm-hmm.
and we stuck the cell phone inside of it,
yep.
and suddenly it's cut off.
Exactly. The astronauts aboard the International Space Station have a room to run to whenever there's a flare coming their way.
Yes. Yes. The nightmare scenario during Apollo was a major solar flare while they were actually down on the moon's surface. It would have been catastrophic.
Oh, my gosh. Let's go to Jason in Las Vegas. Hi, Jason. Go ahead.
Hey, Bill. Jason, I don't know if I can say my last name, can I?
You don't have to. That's okay.
Actually, I was a student of Bill's in Pittsfield. I went to MCI.
Oh. Jason!
There you go. See, he knows you.
And nobody has yet to answer correctly for me who won that magnificent pinball game that day at that school. So.
And I don't think anybody knows.
Okay.
You may have to go ask around at the next reunion.
I'll be at the next reunion. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing well. So hey, how are our defenses? You know, if somebody rolled a barge up somewhere off the coast and tried to put something up into the over us, what are the odds of us taking it out before it got there?
That's a You know, Jason, you were asking great questions 25 years ago. And he still is. That was such a great class at Maine Central Institute. Our most vulnerable point is the Gulf of Mexico. We have a little bit more beefed up security out on the West Coast. But remember several years back, there was a submarine launched ballistic missile
I'm convinced a Chinese sub.
But we were all told it was an optical illusion.
Yeah. Baloney.
That shows how porous the system is. Anybody can cruise into the Gulf of Mexico and pop something off. It's completely unprotected.
I don't even know where we have anti-ballistic systems. Do you?
California and Alaska.
That's it.
That's it. And it's oriented specifically.
None around Washington, D.C.?
Unclassified, declassified, no. And honestly, I don't know if we do. I would like to think we do, but I've never heard of it.
Joan is
we
in
do
Florida.
Have systems.
Go ahead.
Florida, no protection.
All right. Go ahead, Joan.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got a different type of car. It's new. It's a limited edition. It's a sports car. I'm driving down on a new highway in Okeechobee all by myself. Nobody in front of me. Nobody behind me. Florida Highway Patrol coming the other way. Bang. 75 miles an hour. My cruise control was set. 75 miles an hour. My engine cuts off completely. I come to a stop. The cruiser goes past me. My car starts up, throws me back in the seat, and I take off again.
Whoa, do you think they did it to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was the only vehicle on the road other than myself.
Do they have that kind of technology, William, where they can do that?
I've heard rumors about it, but I don't know.
Oh, yes. Yes. Whoa. The military's been using it. They've been threatened to use it on runaway cars when they chase car chases. This is basically the same thing they're using on the bait cars.
There are some people, William, who say the Malaysian Missing 370 was taken that way. Used their controls and off it went.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Who knows? Get your website out if you would, Mr. Forstgen.
Actually, onesecondanswer.com is one source, or if folks want to reach me directly, put a B in front of my last name, B. Forstgen, at Montreat, Montreat.edu. That's the college that I teach at, Montreat College in Montreat, North Carolina.
William, we're going to get this done. Watch this grow, and obviously we're going to need you, and we'll get this done.
God bless you for the work you do. Thank you.
We will be back in a moment with Bill Bean as we talk about demons next.